Welcome to Podcast 7 in the 8-part podcast series on international arbitration, featuring Bob Davidson, who is the head of the JAMS International Arbitration Practice. Podcast 7 is on post-hearing matters and the award.
Okay, post-hearing matters. You've had the hearing. Everyone has gone home. Or let's say the hearing has ended, and they're now sitting around the table wondering what's next. It is usual in these cases, if they're of any size, to ask the lawyers whether or not they wish to have post-hearing briefing or whether or not they wish to make a final argument. Now, that will usually be determined prior to the start of the hearings at some a conference at which you'll get on the phone and make all these rules about demonstrative exhibits and order of witnesses and things like this. This will be one of the topics about whether or not you want post-hearing briefing. And they'll either say yes and we'll decide what the schedule is at the end, or they'll say, well, why don't we wait and we'll decide after it's over. So it's the end of the day. You've finished a bit early because of your excellent management of the hearings. It is now 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And you say to the lawyers, what's your pleasure? You will, by the way, almost always in this proceeding, proceedings have a written record. So the court reporter has taken this testimony. And if they're not getting daily copy, it's not going to be, the transcript won't be ready for 7 or 10 days. What happens next? You will say to the lawyers, and maybe you said it before lunch so they can discuss this before 4 in the afternoon. But if you have to say it at 4 in the afternoon, you'll do it then. And you'll say, look, we're going to take a 15-minute break. I want counsel to confer out of our presence. And we want to know, as a tribunal, whether or not you want post-hearing submissions. If you do, do you want them seriatim? Do you want them simultaneous? Do you want one round? Do you want two? Do you want page limits? And what is your timing, proposed timing? And the tribunal will suggest that we set a date for oral argument after the pleadings have been fully submitted, at which case we can at least pencil in a date, and the tribunal will then tell you whether or not they would like oral argument after they have read the briefs. But we won't have to try to schedule a date after the briefing is in, which gets very difficult. By the way, scheduling can be a nightmare in these international proceedings. You get 3 busy international arbitrators. They're often booked 6 months in advance. And if you don't finish on time and get your dates in your book well in advance, you may be in for significant delay. So you adjourn for 15 minutes. They'll come in and they'll say, all right, we'd like briefing. We have a difference in the page numbers. One side wants simultaneous exchange of briefs. The other wants seriatim exchange of briefs. We both agree that 2 rounds would be sufficient. And as far as timing goes, we're pretty much there, but we have some problems because of vacation schedulings, et cetera, or additional trials that are coming up. You will hear all this, and it's good to hear it off the record, by the way, so they don't have to pay for the transcript pages while you're discussing this. And then you will adjourn with your fellow arbitrators, and you come in and you tell them what the deal is. And you will set it forth, then you'll go back on the record and you say, okay, we're going to have post-hearing briefing. The briefing is to be the claimant's brief is submitted by such and such a date. It's to be no more than 50 pages. Double-spaced, 12-point type, regular margins. I always add that. Everyone laughs. And then the other side will have the same number of pages. perhaps 3 weeks later. And then there'll be another round, 2 weeks for a reply, no more than 25 pages, 2 weeks for a rejoinder after that. And then let's get all our books out now, and we're going to set a date for the possibility of oral argument, which will take place in New York City or, if you're lucky, Paris, France, at such and such a time and place. You will get that set, and then you may get these little issues coming up as you would in the domestic case. Gee, something came up, can I have an extra day type of thing, and leave yourself a little room between the last brief and the time of the oral argument, because first you have to read it, and secondly, you may have an adjournment for reasons you don't anticipate, and you don't want to reschedule once you put in a date for argument or anything else. You will then, after you receive all the briefing and after the oral argument, if in fact that's conducted, you will close the hearings. Almost all rules, not just the JAMS rules, provide for provision you should close the hearings specifically. The ICC requires that an email go out from the tribunal saying the hearings are hereby closed, because that's a requirement under the rules. It's a requirement under our rules, too. Most institutional rules in an international setting do not have a deadline for filing an award after the closing of the hearings. I believe the ICDR has imposed a 60-day at some point. The ICC, in its own internal scheduling, will tell the tribunal it has until, let's say, March 4th, 2016, to finish the case. They'll say that right after the terms of reference are, in fact, submitted to them. And as that March date gets closer, they will automatically adjourn it. So it's gotten to be kind of a joke in a way. I mean, March will go to June, and June will go, however long it takes. But the ICC will, in fact, always give you an extension before the last one expires. And that's, again, remember the niceties of procedure under continental law, that there may be grounds to contest or lack of jurisdiction if, in fact, that provider-induced adjournment of the date to render a final award is granted after the deadline. So they're very careful about stuff like that. And while they'll give you leeway, they may call you up if, in fact, it's taking longer than they think it should take. However, there are dates which the ICC will give to you periodically. You don't have to worry about them. There may be an ICDR requirement about 60 days after you close a hearing. Those are the only institutions that I know of that have that absolute rule. Others are, you know, you should endeavor to render an award 30 days after closing the hearing or after the hearings end, this kind of thing. But there is not the rather absolute statements in the rules that the AAA and JAMS give in their domestic rules. Now, what do you do when you get all the briefs? And maybe you're deciding whether to have oral arguments. You get together with your tribunal, someplace that's mutually convenient. In person is always better than on the phone, but you do what you have to do. And you decide what's happening. Deliberating amongst tribunal members in an international case can be a different delicate process than in a domestic case. Even though all arbitrators are impartial and independent, my own experience is that they are more apparently advocating for their parties who appointed them in international cases than they do in domestic ones. And that may surprise a lot of people, but it's been my experience. Domestic cases, sometimes you get arbitrators who really don't get it, and they start becoming blatant advocates, and it's rather obvious. But I'm finding less of it in domestic cases. In international, almost always, I'm finding arbitrators who are appointed by parties advocating for the parties who appointed them. So you have to maintain these deliberations, whether you're on a wing or you're the chair of the panel. In a careful way. Different arbitrators do it differently. Had a case in Holland, a very famous international arbitrator. Every day after the hearings, there were 2 weeks, we would go back to the hotel. He had a suite. We'd sit around the table, and he'd start off, and he'd go, "Now, what did we learn today?" And we go around the table, we talk about whatever happened, and then we'd go to dinner, and that would be the end of that day. Other arbitrators won't start deliberating till the very end. Others will walk into the room after a witness testifies, roll their eyes, and go, boy, that was craziness, you know. So there are as many reactions to deliberations as there would be in a domestic case. However, be prepared that if you're a chair of a tribunal, I think you'll often find a party-appointed arbitrators on each side advocating more than you wish they would. The award has to be written. These awards are very formalistic, as I said. They tend to be a lot longer than domestic awards. A good third or half of the award is simply procedure, what happened leading up to the hearings, and the rest is evidence. You have had training with respect to how to write an award. There are forms of international awards, but because they are confidential, it's very hard to get hold of one. Suffice it to say, you will recite in some fashion not just the issue to be decided, you will go through the arguments that were made by each side. The claimant contends, and you may go through four paragraphs. Then you'll say the respondent contends, you may go through another four paragraphs. And then you will say the tribunal determines, and you tell the result. And you do that for each issue. It is traditional and rather important that both sides understand that you understood the case. You did not miss an argument that they made. There's one international case of which I'm aware in which the parties cited much case law, one coming out of an African country, one coming, I think, out of Australia, and the award was denied recognition and enforcement in the African state because the arbitrators did not cite and discuss every single case that was cited by either side in the briefing. Now, that could result in an award of 500 pages, but that's life in the fast lane, and sometimes you're going to wind up with those kinds of matters. With respect to deciding something on the basis on a legal theory not argued by the parties, or citing a case, an important citation, that was not discussed in the briefing, international provider organizations and are universal in stating that that is not to be done. If there is a legal theory that you want to discuss or a case that you think is pertinent the other parties did not discuss, your obligation is to say, to write a letter to or an email to both sides and to say, you know, what about this theory or have you considered this case? I will give you 10 days to write a letter brief of no more than five single spaces discussing these two issues only, all right? But you have to do that. The ICC makes you say in any award that you rendered that there is no case cited in this award which has not been cited and discussed by the parties in their briefing. That is a paragraph, a stock paragraph in an ICC award. We can talk about, I guess, philosophically, whether or not you should venture into another case or a legal theory not argued by a party. That gets into areas that you could discuss a long time as to whether or not you should decide based on what is presented to you or whether or not you should do some theoretical search for the truth. Suffice it to say that that's beyond the scope of this, and we're not going to discuss it here. Post-award procedures, they have the same kinds of post-award procedures as in the JAMS domestic rules. There will be a certain number of days, 10 days, 30 days, whatever it is under the provider rules, for a party to ask for corrections to an award. They are usually pretty strict. In other words, only typographical or similar errors are allowed to be corrected. But you will be guided by the rules you're operating under. I spoke about proceedings to recognize and enforce an award or to deny recognition and enforcement to an award. Those are in the bailiwick of the council. You don't have to worry about that. Once you sign your international arbitration award, date and sign it. It also has a line that says dated, and then it says the place of arbitration. If you, for example, have a place of arbitration, as I did once, I had a Californian against an Argentinian, and the place of arbitration was designated as Trinidad and Tobago. And there was a method in the madness. Trinidad and Tobago is actually the only member of the New York Convention in those days that was about midway between the two. The parties decided for convenience, much to my chagrin, to have the hearings in Miami. And so we had the hearings in Miami, but the award said dated Trinidad made this blank day of blank Trinidad and Tobago. You always place the place of arbitration that's recited in the clause as being where the award was made. That made it an international award enforceable under the New York Convention. The New York Convention, by the way, if I have not mentioned it previously, has about 140 signatories to it. So you're talking about the one dispute resolution mechanism worldwide that is almost universally accepted by every country that you would do business in, or those that you would not like to do business in, but may find yourself in.